All right, folks, welcome back to yet another episode of Fresh Juice, an indie game podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tommy Fresh, and joined as always, it is
Matty Juice. What is up, everybody? We got a special episode here for you folks. A little different. Doing something a little different. You want to tell the folks what's going on here, Tom?
Well, folks, I am getting married this week, right? So I'll be going away a little bit after, just for a couple days. But also next week is Thanksgiving, so it's just like a lot going on. So we're going to just review two games today, split it into two episodes. It's going to be a long episode split into two episodes. You're not even going to know the difference, folks. You're going to be like, well, that was a regular episode, and there's going to be another regular episode next week. Kinda, except it's going to be a continuation. We're only going to do news for this week when you're listening now, and then the listener questions will be answered next week. So that's basically it, folks. I mean, it's just going to be a wild time regardless, as it always is. The two games that we are reviewing are... Well, I'll be talking about Menace from the Deep, a roguelike deck builder, very Lovecraftian and cosmic horror type game, which is kind of interesting. And Maddie will be reviewing next week, technically, a game called Munch, which is a dark fantasy action roguelike, something like that. Yep. So it's going to be a ball of fun, but please strap in your seatbelts, get ready to get juiced, and stay fresh with us because we got to catch up. What's going on? How you been, buddy?
I've been doing good, you know, just honestly, this past weekend kind of flew by a bit. Was that this week? No, that was last week. Went to a wedding. It was great. Great rice balls at the wedding, by the way. Mm-hmm. Delicious. They had corned beef there, too, which is like, I was just happy to have it, you know, like in November. But yeah, just been kind of doing puppy stuff, you know, going like a little bit of hiking kind of with him. And yeah, just been kind of focused on that, having my in-laws come over because they're going to actually be watching him while we're at your wedding upcoming. So, you know, just teaching them, you know, showing them like, oh, here's where his food is, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, just been doing a lot of dog stuff lately, but yeah, it hasn't been too crazy. Been playing a lot of Pokemon TCG Pocket still, typically in the bathroom or in the morning. Sure. I'm just laying in bed. So that's been fun. It's been a good time. And yeah, also obviously preparing for the wedding a bit. I know I gotta pick up the suit there with that bolo tie action. Getting that speech ready, all that stuff. So yeah, just getting ready for that, but and looking forward to some time off too coming up as well. Took that week of Thanksgiving off. Should be nice to just get a little break from work. So yeah, but that's about it. What about you? How's everything going? I'm sure you're just eager to get everything started.
Eager to start doing this wedding and ending this wedding, and you know, being able to look at it and say, hey, we had a lot of fun. But yeah, last week was like hell week at work. It's an annual business plan season. Mm. So you kind of, you know, you meet up with all your wholesalers and you try to be like, hey, you're not doing great, but we're going to spin it in a way that seems like you have the potential to do great if you just do what we ask you. So it was a lot of that. And it's stressful leading up to that because you never know how they're going to respond. And because my thing is, I get afraid that when a rat is trapped in a corner, right, it tries to gnaw its way out.
Yeah.
So, like, and I don't have any control over the presentation that we do and how we frame the information that we give them. So I'm worried that whoever does it is going to be like, what the hell, you guys suck, and then they're gonna be like, well, you guys suck, and then it's gonna be a really awkward thing. Luckily we have a bunch of professionals that that work with us, so it didn't happen like that. So, and it was all fine and dandy. So yeah, it's been getting ready for the wedding. I have a wedding beer that I'm picking up tomorrow from my work. They agreed to make a wedding beer. So I also grabbed a jockey box. For those who don't know, a jockey box is basically like a cooler that you bring around and you can hook up a draft system to it. So you can just pour beer wherever. It's good to have. Yeah. I figured this is a pretty good investment because, well, I'll just pour beer at more parties and stuff like that. And, you know, I want it. It's almost like kind of cool because you can just get a sixth of beer, right? The smaller kegs for the people that don't know what they're called. Sometimes they call them logs up in like New England for the New Englanders out there. Yeah, they call them logs.
A log of beer. All right.
Yep. And that's like 42 pints, which I think for like a party is like kind of perfect if everybody's down to drink the same beer, which you're kind of forced to. So that is kind of cool. I was actually, right before we did this, I was cleaning it. That was fun. There's some stuff for the YouTube viewers. And what else? Just doing wedding stuff, man. It's just, I had like nightmares last night that I was late to my own wedding.
Yeah. That'll happen, you know.
Yeah. I just like, I don't know. It's, I'm just ready to be there and be square and like get a little crazy, but
yeah. I think once like the rehearsal dinner comes too, it'll just be like,
yeah.
You're just smooth sailing from there, you know.
Smooth sailing. Yeah. Everything except setting up the beer on the day of the wedding.
Yeah.
It's like they're not being very helpful and accommodating about it. But that is the nature of the beast, so I have to, like, you know, just put on my big boy boots and just do it, you know? What we have to do. Nothing you have to do is talk about the news. Holy smokes. The news.
Holy moly.
The Discord. Holy crap. It's so sick. The Discord is in the show notes. The Juice Heads hang out there. It's a great place to share games and share the good times. Share pictures of the food. I posted a sick picture of a delicious pork roll and cheese on everything bagel this morning. I was losing my mind. That thing was so good.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm paying for it already. I'll tell you that much. But what's the biggest news right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, listeners might already know, but the Game Awards have officially announced their nominees for this year. Game Awards are on December 12th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. And there is some pretty awesome stuff around a game that we both love, Balatro. Balatro has been nominated for Game of the Year, along with a few other categories, Best Game Direction, Best Independent Game, Best Debut Indie Game. I think a few other categories perhaps as well.
Best Mobile Game.
Best Mobile Game. There you are. There you have it. So it's awesome. Yeah, it's great to see. Obviously, we were hoping Balatro would get a Game of the Year nod there. But as far as the other Game of the Year nominees, I'll just kind of go over right now, and I'll go over a few categories here. We've got for Game of the Year, Astrobot, Balatro, Black Myth Wukong, Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and Metaphor ReFantazio, which I've actually heard that game is awesome. I have not played it myself. But before we get into any of the other categories, though, Tom, there is an interesting thing here with the Game of the Year, and I've seen it as a hot topic on Twitter recently since these nominees were announced. And it's around DLCs being able to be nominated for Game of the Year. Obviously, got Elden Ring Shadow of the Erdtree on there, which is a very large DLC. Mm-hmm. And there's a good group of people that say that it's okay that DLCs are nominated for a Game of the Year category. A lot of other people say it shouldn't be. I'm just kind of curious, where do you think, you know, where do you land on something like that?
Yeah, I don't love it, to be honest. I understand a lot of work goes into it, but it's like a little weird. To me, it's like, okay, so we're in the realm now, in like the reality, that if a movie does well, sometimes they will make a companion show, right? The Batman did well. We just got The Penguin, right? And The Penguin was a apparently excellent. I haven't watched
it
yet.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. I can't wait to watch it, but like, I'm not going to say, I mean, to me, that would be like if The Penguin got nominated for Best Picture, right?
Yeah.
It's like DLC, good DLC to The Batman and Elden Ring's Shadow of the Erdtree, while I'm sure it's very good, is kind of like The Penguin in this situation. So I don't I don't really agree with it, to be honest, because Elden Ring got its flowers. Yeah. Does it need more? I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I think I firmly think that DLCs or expansion should not be able to be nominated for Game of the Year. I actually wish there was just a separate category for best expansion, right? Or something like that. Best DLC, because there are plenty of games that come out with amazing expansions. I mean, just right off the top of my head, like No Man's Sky has come out with like 20 free of them, free expansions. I don't think it's ever been nominated for Game of the Year, any of those expansions. I understand Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree, it's like a $40 expansion. It's basically like you're buying another game. It's big, but it's requires the original game still, right? So if someone is going and looking at this, right, and let's say they don't know a lot about games, but they're like, oh, what one Game of the Year? Oh, wow, Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree. They go to try to buy it. They're going to be looking at, what, like a over $100 price tag in order to buy that. That just doesn't make sense to me. And they're also going to have to play a good part of Elden Ring to even get access to this DLC, right? So it's like, it's just misleading to me to have these nominated. I know it's happened before as well. I'm also, a whole nother conversation is like, should remasters be considered as part of the Game of the Year discussion? I think that one holds a little bit more weight because sometimes remasters can really, you know, change a lot of, they modernize a game to the point where like, it's like, wow, this is just such a better experience versus like when it originally released. There's a little bit more of an argument there, but I just think there should just be a separate category for this sort of stuff. But hopefully we won't have to worry about it when Balatro takes it home, right? So, you know.
So do you think that Balatro has a shot here? Because these games are all certainly good in this category, but it is the oddity. It is the odd man out in terms of everything. Well, I think it's the only indie game, right? Astrobot's Sony.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this metaphor game
actually, Black Myth Wukong might be indie. I don't know. Or like,
yeah.
I'm not exactly sure.
It could be. I think I did see it categorized as indie, but I saw some people push back on that. So, you know, it's one of those situations. But I actually think, you know, after seeing the nominees here, I think Balatro has a good shot. I actually think it's going to be between Balatro and Elden Ring just because of, you know, what we've seen throughout the year. I think Astrobot had a lot of hype around it. It's only on PlayStation, though. I think it's pretty rare for a game. It's only available on one console to win unless it's Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know about that. I haven't, you know, I'm not a Final Fantasy guy. So I don't know much about that. Metaphor, I've heard is good, but I haven't heard enough about this Metaphor game to be like, this is up there. And then Black Myth Wukong, I've heard it. You know, I think it's had some good hype around it, but I also did see people comparing it to a Souls game, and it just doesn't make sense to me that like Black Myth Wukong would beat Elden Ring Shadow of the Erdtree in a Game of the Year. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's how people are going to view Wukong is like as a Souls like, you might as well just pick Elden Ring at that point. But I think Balatro has a good shot. It is kind of wild, you know, like the for a solo dev to really be up here with these giants, basically. So we'll see what happens, but I do think, you know, we'll talk about like best independent game, those nominees. I think it has a really strong shot of winning that one. I don't know. What I mean, do you think it has a shot?
From what I know, yes. Now, like, I don't really know enough about Metaphor ReFantazio, but it seems to be in that kind of anime style, which is not for everybody. I would say either Elden Ring or Black Myth would kind of fall in line with what they tend to give the Game of the Year award to. These kind of sweeping, hyper-realistic, epic games. Astrobot, I know, is supposed to be a really good game. But to me, when I look at it, I'm like, well, this is just... And this is out, like, I'm outside looking in because I don't really know. But to me, it looks like, hey, Sony's like, we want our Mario.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
That's it, which is fine. I think they totally entitled to have that. And then Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Listen, I know that game's supposed to be amazing, right? I don't know how many more remasters of that. I don't know. Whatever, it's still always going to be amazing. I think it's always going to go into the annals of game history. And then Baltro is the odd man out. So what happens here, if Baltro wins, I can almost guarantee it, we're going to see the reactions from the gaming community, where it's going to be like when Killer Mike won Best Rap Album this past year, where people were like, who's Killer Mike? Well... You don't know rap. You don't know video games. If Bowser wins, like, that is the reactions I would expect to happen. Although I think Bowser at this point is pretty well known, especially since it's like it's still at number two on iOS App Store. It might even be number one on some on Android. I'm not sure. So yeah, I'm pulling for Bowser, obviously, but. I'm not going to be like, how did it not win? It's just not the kind of game that would typically win, but it's going to have, it's the game that has the broadest appeal and the most lasting effect, right? If you told me initially that they're going to launch this not immediately on mobile and launch it like half a year later, I think I would have said, I hope people still really love this game at that point.
Yeah.
And then they launched the mobile and it exceeded, people were rebuying it, right? I had Apple Arcade, but like, I was like, oh yeah, no brainer. I didn't think I would even play it. I was like, I had just beaten it. I 100%ed it on the Switch. I'll put it on my phone. I'll see what happens. Now I'm on the gold stakes again. It's really that good of a game. So we're pulling for you, local thunk.
Yeah. I'll cast my vote too, because there is the kind of community voting, right? I don't know how much weight that is though, obviously. Yeah. But I know like typically like their judges kinda I guess end up deciding. But great to at least have it nominated, right? I think that was the big question, right? Is like we were just like, will it even get nominated, right? I know we talked also about like Animal Well potentially being a Game of the Year nod, but it looks like Baltro got that nod instead. But I know for Best Independent Game, the nominees were Animal Well, Baltro, Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, Neva, not sure how to say it, and UFO 50. So I think it's going to be between Baltro and Animal Well. I haven't really looked into Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, but I know Neva and UFO 50. I just don't think that's probably going to pull in Best Indie Game. What are you thinking about this one? You think Baltro's got it on lock, or
it'll be a little challenging? It's kind of interesting because I'm looking at Baltro and I'm looking at these nominations, right? Like Baltro shows up the most, right? Game direction was all the same. Games that were nominated for Game of the Year. I don't think it's going to get game direction. I think that probably goes to something a little bit more cinematic, like Black Myth Wukong. But I think that it should be a lock for Best Indie Game just based on it being nominated for Game of the Year. Like, I don't know how they would differentiate that. And then also it's nominated for Best Debut Indie Game. Along with Animal Well, Manor Lords, Pacific Drive, and The Plucky Squire, all good games. But like, I'm looking at this, is this a Return of the King, Lord of the Rings, Oscar sweep? I'm not sure. That would be crazy.
It would be. Yeah, I think know, Manor Lords is definitely a really impressive game, also made by a solo dev that a lot of people love. Pacific Drive, I've seen a lot of good things for. Plucky Squire, I'm kind of surprised it's up here. I saw some, you know, iffy feedback about that game. I do think Animal Well and Ballast Row, again, going to be head-to-head for a debut indie game. But yeah, we could be seeing a potential sweep here. Who knows? But it's just really cool to see like a game that we love, right? We've been talking about all year, nominated for all these different things, and hopefully they can come home with a few of these awards. But yeah, just cool stuff. Cool stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it just would be kind of funny, right? Like,
yeah,
you're just... People are like the people that don't know Baljo, like a poker game,
right?
One,
yeah,
yeah, man.
And I need to see the Balatro Game of the Year edition release if it does win, you know, with a bunch of new jokers, you know, something like that. Would be pretty cool. I know they are planning that 2025 expansion, right? So yeah, if it does win Game of the Year, I'm sure there'll be something related to Game of the Year in there. For the game, but pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, it is pretty, very cool. It is,
yeah,
very
yeah, cool. Awesome to see that today. But hey, that was all the news I had. Just some of these nominees, you know, that were announced for the Game Awards. Do you have anything else that you wanted to cover for the news?
No, that's pretty much it. It's been kind of slow. I mean, I haven't really been able to pay attention. This was the biggest news, right? Yeah. I'm just like looking at Polygon writing about Balatro and why it could win. I just want to like see what they're saying in terms of why it could win in terms of indie darlings, poker roguelike. Balatro is right up there with the likes of Animal Well and UFO 50 with a 90 Metascore. It's also more widely and consistently played. Not only is it popular, but people who like it are probably still playing it and unlikely to stop before voting. It might be the stickiest game of the year. And it says weaknesses. It's a purely systemic card game with zero narrative elements, something that does not historically go over well at the Game Awards, understandably, as we said. There's also a question mark on over how broad its international appeal is, an important factor for TGA's diverse voting jury, which I'm interested. I mean, poker's a, I feel like, a pretty international game.
Yeah, I wonder if... maybe there was some weird laws maybe where Balatro couldn't be released in certain countries because it was poker-esque, something like that. Maybe I'm not too sure, but I view poker as a pretty global game in general, but who knows though. Yeah. I'm not sure how much of like the voting jury is international, you know, for the Game Awards, but I guess that plays a factor.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a tag here about the momentum. It's slightly going up because the new mobile version had arrived at the perfect moment to remind the jury why they couldn't stop playing it back in February. It has overperformed in terms of nominations with 5 under its belt, including in game direction, where games of its type rarely, if ever, appear, not to be ruled out. Hey, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of an award in itself, right, to be nominated for so many different things. I'm sure Local Thunk was just taken back by it, so we're pulling for you, Balatro. If you're listening, Local Thunk, we want you to sweep it.
We want you to sweep it.
See what happens.
But we do have a game to talk about this week and another one next week. We are talking about, we're starting with Menace from the Deep, which is from developer and publisher Flatcoon. And Menace of the Deep is an enthralling roguelike deck-building card game that unfolds in a dark world, drawing inspiration from Howard Lovecraft and the Cthulhu mythos set against the backdrop of 1920s USA. The narrative revolves around a clandestine occult society. I was the one to play this game. Now, you hop right in, and the first thing that's going to strike you if you play this game is, this is going to be very narrative driven, which is, unlike something like Balatro, which we were just talking about, is not that typical in these kind of roguelike games or even roguelike deck builders. Now, hopping into the gameplay, pretty straightforward. You hop in, you get this, tutorial-esque encounter for the combat, and then you get right into the story. The story, I'll talk about in a hot second, is pretty interesting. But the gameplay, some notable things. It's going to be very similar to something like even Slay the Spire, right? Your mm-hmm. guys on the left of the screen, you usually have a companion like a dog, at least to start out with. And you're fighting enemies on the right side of the screen. You can see their intentions and where they plan on attacking, whether it's you or your companion. And then also if they're planning on blocking or like casting a spell or putting a curse on you or something like that. So you have a deck of cards that you start out with. And then you also have a bar up top for your equipment and then your consumables, right? So your equipment stuff, like, I think it's like a reuse, tends to be a little bit reusable, where the the consumables are once, right? Like, and they'll have a ranging kind of appeal to why you should be using them. Sometimes there's that push and pull of like, this is something good at the cost of something, or this is like really bad, but like if you construct your deck in a certain way, you can make it work, which is kind of cool. And you also, when you hop in, you choose the name of this kind of agent for this cult. And you go out, and if you die, you have to choose a new guy, right? A new name and stuff like that.
Okay.
Where the progression here is, as you go through, you unlock more cards that you can find, unlock more cards, consumables, equipment that you can find throughout the runs and stuff like that. Cool card upgrade system in this game that I've never really come across in deck building roguelikes, which is kind of interesting. Rather than like finding like an event or something like that where you can upgrade the card or like hitting like a certain rest area where you get the option to upgrade the card. Mm-hmm. Each card has a meter up top, and each time you use the card, it gets a tick on the meter. So once you fill the meter, you get to upgrade the card. So you're incentivized to actually like try to use the cards that you want to upgrade and keep in your deck, which is kind of cool. So you're like, I don't even need to play this card this turn, but like I want to upgrade it at some point. So maybe I'll just play it this turn just to get a little bit of juice in, a little fresh juice into my card, which is cool. Now, the progression on the run is interesting. You also have, and this is similar to actually the game As We Descend, which I'm in the beta right now, where you have a separate kind of deck where rather than the classic like spider web kind of map that you get in like Slay the Spire, you mm-hmm. have another deck where you get three options to do something. So it could be like go to the shop or encounter some angry villagers or encounter some evil beings from another world or something like that. And they all have a fuel cost, which is kind of interesting. So you have X amount of fuel because you're going out in your car. So you have to think about the order in which you're playing these cards, because using fuel, and when you run out of fuel, I think you automatically go into the boss fight. And when that happens, if you didn't like prep enough, you're going to get kind of screwed, right? So I thought that was really cool. Some like really cool systems here with the story-based progression and the card upgrade system and then the fuel system. I thought that was all really, really cool and like really interesting and like brought some freshness to the genre. In terms of some negatives on the gameplay, I felt like there were some weird card playing quirks where like, yeah, you would try to play it and sometimes it would slip right back because you didn't place it on the wrong right thing, and then it felt like pretty easy to accidentally place it on the wrong like enemy or yourself or whatever. And that you kind of get used to it, but initially it was a little weird and I wasn't a huge fan of it. And then I felt like the combat was not as dynamic as I would like it to be, right? I think there's a lot going on, like especially with the UI, and I'll talk about that in like the art and aesthetics, that if the actual combat felt a little stagnant, and I wasn't a huge fan of that aspect, but everything surrounding it I thought was totally fine. But I think that was my biggest thing that I wasn't like a huge fan of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of story, this is a very story-based game. As I said, it's very cool if you like cosmic horror or Lovecraft or any of that kind of stuff, or even just like period piece stuff, like 1920s kind of, I guess maybe not LA noir, but like a little bit like that.
Yeah. Right?
You know, because I felt like this was such a cool story to hop into. And you're like, you know exactly what it's all about, because you got this like weird, strange cult, and they're talking, they're kind of devious, they're kind of tricking this town that you came to, and you got to go out and you start to realize some weird stuff is happening, and maybe it has to do with what your cult is doing, or maybe it doesn't, or maybe you're about to be punished. You don't really know. And you get these really cool Lovecraftian cosmic beings you have to fight, and that come up throughout the like the fuel stage, where you have to like go and choose like your next stage, which is awesome. I think if you like that stuff, this is the perfect game. You know, this is honestly, I wish I would have played this closer to like Halloween. I think it would have been a better time to play it, but people love Lovecraftian stuff all year round. So I think that it kind of hit it out of the park here, even in terms of the aesthetics, which I'll talk about. And also there's a lot of characters, right? This is certainly something where you're going to run into people throughout your runs, and you're going to have these really neat story-based encounters where you're going to be kind of like asked, almost like create your own adventure kind of thing. Like, you found a woman while driving and she seemed scared. She tried to wave you down. Do you keep driving? Do you stop? Do you do this? Do you do that? And like, you have to weigh the options and kind of test it out, which gives a lot of agency to like how you experience the story, which I also really enjoy. Yeah. My biggest complaint, which is not even really a complaint, is that the main characters of the story, not you, but like back at the base, like the mansion that you're kind of, I guess it's like an old art museum or something like that, where they're doing their dastardly stuff. They're all a little one note, a little basic, like this is the evil like leader of the cult. And they're even like called the head, the brain, and the hand. Like the head is like the head guy, and then the hand is like the one who does all the dirty work. The brain's the smart one, yada yada yada. Which it adds some charm to it, but they're just what they are. And I think I would have liked a little bit more out of them, but maybe as I play more, I'll get that.
Yeah,
and then the art. I think it looks great, right? It has this like papery flat style, like really illustrated, that really works with the subject matter. It feels like you kind of picked up a Lovecraft picture book at like Barnes and Nobles, and you're like flipping through it, or Borders. Shout out Borders. We miss you. it just is like really well illustrated, super cool character design. From the enemies to the story characters to the backdrops. Like, honestly, it is a really well illustrated game. Now, where I had some issues was the UI could have been a little cleaned up, especially in the combat. It's a lot of things to keep.